I am John Purvis, and I represent the appellants in this matter, and my registration number is 925, which, hearing some of the others, makes me think maybe I missed a mailing, but...
It's a little higher than mine, Mr. Purvis.
I see, Ron. Well, I will jump right to the legal issues, just a brief preface, which is to say that, as the court knows, this is a case arising out of an episode where a young man, 11 years old at the time, was on an inflatable amusement device at a boat club year-end party. Strong gust of wind came along. He and several other kids were blown into the air, and my client's name is Sean Wacker, then 11, as I indicated, and he was by a considerable height in the air, was dumped out of the device, fell on his head, and had a severe brain injury. And with that factual backdrop, get right to the legal issues, which is really the overarching issue here, is whether, as the trial court ruled, the attractive nuisance doctrine under the Colorado Premises Liability Act, which has been held to be incorporated in that doctrine, in that statute by prior case law, applies only to trespassers. And the sort of essence of this case is, if Sean Wacker, who was an invited guest at this boat club party, invited by members of the boat club, if he had been a trespasser, let's say he lived in the adjoining subdivision, which butts up against this boat club premises, and he had wandered over on his own as a trespasser and been injured as he was, then under the trial court's ruling, he would have the protections and assistance of the attractive nuisance doctrine because he was a trespasser.
But only if he were enticed on the property by the attractive nuisance, correct? Enticed to trespass by the attractive nuisance.
Well, no, I don't think so, Your Honor. I mean, that is old case law indicating, there is old case law indicating that that's the case, but our point with respect to that case law is that that has all been trumped and superseded by the 1986 and 1990 enactments of the premises liability statute, and that if the statute is read as it's written, then, as it's supposed to be, then it applies to all children under the age of 14. It does not make any exception in that statutory language for children who are invitees, nor for children who are licensees. It says simply children under the age of 14, which brings us really to a key point in terms of our point of view on this thing, and that is that the action of the trial court really disregards several principles of Colorado law governing application and construction of statutes. There are policy issues obviously involved in this case, but it's not necessary really to sort those out because this case really hinges on these principles of statutory application and construction.
With due deference to your eminent bar numbers, sir, isn't there at least an argument to be made that those Colorado Supreme Court decisions that you referenced are still active and should have been discussed in your briefs, which aren't even cited? I read them because there's many decades of case law that I needed to know about to determine whether they've been incorporated into the statute or not, and you blithely dismissed them without even citing them. Why is that?
The reason is really very straightforward, Your Honor. The reason is because it's our point of view that all of that case law, number one, is limited to circumstances where there were trespassers. There is no case law that says this applies only to trespassers that I'm aware of. It's just by implication, that's as far as it went.
Well, had you cited the case of Nuremberg versus Gavin, that case says the attractive nuisance doctrine is only an exception to the general rule limiting the liability of landowners as to child trespassers. You can see why that case might have given me some pause and why I would have liked to hear some discussion about that case in your briefs.
Here would be the key response to it, which I think is included in our brief, Your Honor, and that is that the statute trumps all of that.
Statute doesn't say anything about whether it trumps it or not, does it?
It doesn't make any effort.
In fact, the statute says which cases it's overruling and which ones it's adopting.
From the 86 version, that's correct. But it doesn't make any reference to any particular Colorado case or the Colorado law on attractive nuisance doctrine. It just talks generally about the attractive nuisance doctrine.
Well, isn't there a really good argument to be made that when it mentioned the attractive nuisance doctrine in the amendment to the statute, it was just incorporating the prior case law, because the legislature is supposed to know what the prior case law is. And if it's going to overrule it, it's supposed to tell us that.
The legislature is presumed to know not only what the Colorado law is, but generally, under the authorities we've cited, what the law around the country is.
Well, the law around the country is inconsistent with old Colorado law, isn't it?
Old Colorado law is a backwater of an isolated backwater, which is...
But you've given us no indication that the legislature said old Colorado law is inconsistent with what we want to do.
Well, we have, I think, Your Honor. We pointed out to the court that there was a Colorado case saying that the attractive nuisance doctrine before the Premises Liability Act applied generally to persons under 18, to minor children. The legislature clearly changed that with the language of the statute.
Sure, they changed the age range.
What? 14.
Yes, yes. And what authority do you have that they changed anything other than the age range?
The language that they used, which did not create any exceptions to that category of children under the age of 14. That's all they talked about. They didn't talk about licensees. They didn't talk about invitees.
But it mentions attractive nuisance doctrines. So don't we have to look to case law to find out what the attractive nuisance doctrine is?
We do, I think, Your Honor, to the extent it's important. But when looking at that, we have to look not only at case law preceding the statute by 20 years, but also at the restatement in Section 343B, which clearly makes the doctrine applicable to invitees and licensee children. We have to look at the general...
Yes, but the restatement also notes that Colorado law is the exception that applies it only to trespassers.
Talking about case law 20 years before the statutory language.
Mr. Provost, if I can ask you, are you talking about the statute? Thank you. On the statutory language, are you talking about 3.5? You've mentioned the statutory language a couple of times. I'm trying to figure out which section you're talking about.
Well,
Judge Terry's asking about the section that adopts and incorporates the attractive nuisance doctrine. You said a couple of times the statutory language supersedes that. I'm trying to figure out which language you're talking about.
It's really out of 1321.115.2, which says this subsection shall not be construed to abrogate the doctrine of attractive nuisance as applied to persons under 14 years of age.
Okay.
That's the key.
That's it. All right.
What is the standard of care under the attractive nuisance?
Reasonable care, Your Honor.
So that would be the equivalent of an invitee.
Well, it's looser, broader, and more general than the standard applicable to the invitee, which is a failure to exercise reasonable care an unreasonable failure to exercise reasonable care with respect to essentially a danger of which the property owner knew or should have known.
So it's, if anything, a higher and broader standard of care for the landowner than otherwise exists under the statute.
That's correct. The reasonable care standard is that.
Now, this section that says it's not to abrogate is in the general section that precedes the standard of care for each group. As I recall, after this section, it goes one for invitees, two for licensees, and three for trespassers.
That's right, sir.
So if this were in the trespass section, it might have an entirely different meaning than if it's in the general. It said we're talking, three is talking about all the remaining sections.
3.5 talks about all the remaining sections.
Yeah, and it leaves viable the doctrine of attractive nuisance.
It does. It expressly says it will not be aggregated as to kids under 14. But the effect of what the trial court's order is to carve out exceptions judicially for these kids who are invitees and licensees, where that doesn't happen by the Legislative Act. The other thing that's important, I think, to say here, Your Honor, is there is the part in 3.5 referred to by Judge Gabriel, which says it is the intent of the General Assembly in enacting the provisions of subsection 3 of this section that the circumstances under which a licensee may recover include all of the circumstances under which a trespasser could recover, etc. So there's an expression in this legislation of a legislative intent that there should not be the sort of inverted hierarchy that was condemned in Gallegos v. Phipps.
Well, let's talk about that, counsel, because the old case law basically transforms an attractive nuisance child, that is, a child that was induced to trespass, incited it to trespass onto the land by an attractive nuisance, basically converts that child into an invitee, doesn't it?
Well,
it treats it as if the child were invited by the nuisance and then uses a standard of care for invitees, for trespassers.
I would say that's close by my understanding, not quite right, Your Honor, because I think the old standard under the attractive nuisance doctrine was reasonable care, not the statutory standard that's called out for invitees.
Well, aren't the statutory standards a subset of reasonable care? Hasn't the legislature determined that reasonable care, in fact, it mentions in subsection B, a licensee may recover for damages caused by the landowner's unreasonable failure to exercise reasonable care, but only about dangers about which he or she actually knew. So isn't that, I'm befuddled by your view that reasonable care is some greater standard than what is provided under the statute.
Reasonable care, for instance, would provide that a person should be on inquiry notice, which is the case in this case. Inquiry notice to check and see if what you've got on your premises is safe if you're going to have kids there. The standard that sets forth for invitees only applies if the jury finds that the landowner knew or should have known. It doesn't talk anything about inquiry notice. It doesn't talk anything about hiring a negligent hiring of an independent contractor, none of that kind of stuff.
And should have known cover inquiry?
Pardon me?
Doesn't should have known cover inquiry?
I suppose arguably, but it would be better said if he could have known by the exercise of reasonable care to make an inquiry to see what that would produce. Rather than should have known. You can argue on these facts that there's no way that the boat club should have known anything, that it was within the province of the people renting the equipment to know that.
Mr. Professor, I can interrupt you. This is a burning question of mine on this case. I want to make sure I'm understanding what you're arguing to us. Is it your position that the attractive nuisance doctrine applies to all three categories, invitee, trespasser, and licensee?
Yes.
So it applies to all three. And I think your argument is if we don't apply it that way, we have an inverted hierarchy problem.
Correct.
Am I correct?
And we're creating exceptions that the legislature didn't make.
Okay. Let's assume that you're right. All right, just for purpose of argument, you're totally right. It applies to all three. I know you disagree that enticement to trespass is an element. Assume it is, for purposes of my question. Well, we'd agree with you, or assume you're right, and if enticement to trespass is an element, doesn't your client lose in this case, and we don't have to get to any of this issue about inverted hierarchy?
I don't think so, Your Honor. The reason is because if you look at the restatement discussion of what the law should be in recommended and at the amateur discussion of it, it says that if what occurs is fundamentally the equivalent of being lured onto the land or enticed, i.e. being invited, then the landowner's duties are the same as if they were trespassing.
Okay.
That's what we have.
I understand what you're saying. But let's say we were, and I understand, I've read the restatement, I understand what you're saying. But let's say we say under Colorado law, which we adopt here, you have to entice to trespass. And I think you say the standard is different. Let's say we respectfully disagree. Is there any evidence here that there was an enticement to trespass? That the nuisance here, that the inflatable, the bungee run, invited SW onto this property?
No, you know, it's certainly arguable that it had the capacity to entice other kids, the neighborhood kids I'm talking about. But no, the simple agreed fact is that this young man, Sean Wacker, was invited to attend the party, both by the club generally making it available to guests, the party, and by the particular members that he was with, inviting him to come and accompany them.
So were we to assume that the attract and nuisance applied to all three? Do we have an inverted hierarchy problem anymore?
No.
Okay.
I think that's correct, and we don't have the exception problem. We don't have the problem of being inconsistent with the harmonious reading of the overall statute that they shouldn't have this inverted hierarchy. You shouldn't have greater protections for trespassers than you have for licensees and invitees. I have run my course, I believe. I thank the court.
Thank you, counsel.
We have a real disparity here. Joel Palmer, Your Honor, barn number 36459 on behalf of the Appalese in this matter, Appalee Towers Boat Club. I'd like to begin by talking about a fundamental point regarding the premises liability statute. It's the paramount point about the statute, which is this. In subpart 1.5A of that statute, the legislature explains the very reason why it enacted the statute in 1986 in the first place, and then subsequently amended it in 1990. Quote, to assure that the ability of an injured party to recover is correlated with his status as a trespasser, licensee, or invitee. The Gallegos case, of which has some import in this matter, had its own language specifying what that meant. The statute was, quote, a statement by the legislature that the landowner's liability should once again depend on the reason for the presence on the property. In other words, the claimant's presence on the property. It was a rejection of the notion that we wanted to get into a sheer reasonability analysis without any consideration at all for why the plaintiff was there in the first place. Look at the attractive nuisance doctrine and the way it was applied both traditionally and by the Colorado Supreme Court time and again over the course of decades. What was the question they asked? Okay, we know this person was a trespasser. This, in that case, it was a minor because it could apply to people under the age of 18. If they trespassed, why did they do it? Why were they there? Did they trespass because this irresistible object to a child, let's say a merry-go-round, entice them to trespass? It was always about why are you on the property? And that comports perfectly with the notion of the goal of the statute, which is to assure that the ability is correlated to the status as a trespasser, licensee, or invitee. In other words, why are they there? The argument of appellants in this case is, and they've just said it again, doesn't make a bit of difference why Sean Wacker was on this property. Doesn't matter if he was attracted or enticed by an alleged attractive nuisance. It doesn't matter if he was brought on by a social guest. It doesn't matter if he was an invitee. And we submitted in our brief and submit here now that interpretation of the statute it must be incorrect based on the very goal that the legislature laid out, that the touchstone for a landowner's liability is the reason why the plaintiff is on the property.
Understanding your position about that, Mr. Palmer, I'd like you to respond to the appellant's argument regarding subsection 3.5, which indicates that licensee should always, the hierarchy, that basically everyone should always be treated better than a trespasser. How do you respond to that?
Well, we respond to that by, we go back to the language, and what we're really wrestling about in this case is subpart 2, paragraph 2, that language about it does not abrogate the doctrine of attractive nuisance. And a question that was asked is, what does that mean? What does that language mean, and what do we mean by the attractive nuisance doctrine? And we have to harmonize that with paragraph 3.5, as well as with the earlier portion of paragraph 2 that says that a landowner shall be liable only as specified in subpart 3, the three categories with the three specified duties of care. And the only way I see, and we've argued to harmonize that, is the legislature was presumed to understand what the attractive nuisance doctrine was under the precedent set by the Colorado Supreme Court, namely that it applied in a very limited circumstance. A child a minor, I guess I should say, at common law, enticed to trespass. And why did the doctrine exist? Why did we take that child and treat them differently than another trespasser? Because that attractive nuisance operated as an invitation. Time and again, we see in the older cases discussing the nature of the attractive nuisance being an invitation. So we take the child and elevate them up and effectively treat them as an invitee.
Let me ask you this. If a child trespasses, sees an attractive nuisance, moves onto the property towards the attractive nuisance, trips over a crack in the sidewalk or something and falls flat on his face and suffers serious injury. Is that an attractive nuisance case?
But not injured by the attractive nuisance that drew them on?
I have a daughter who lives right next to a school. She wants to put a swimming pool in her backyard, and I say, don't do it, because the students will inevitably come across and dive in the pool. But let's assume the students come onto the land and are injured some other way. Mm-hmm. Are they owed a duty other than as a trespasser under our law?
I don't believe so.
And it's only if they're injured by the entity itself.
I believe so.
So is the trespass to the property or to the entity?
I'm not sure.
Is the trespass to the property, or is the trespass to the nuisance itself?
I believe if we're going to stay consistent with the Colorado Supreme Court precedent, which the legislature was presumed to know and presumed to be abiding by when it enacted that language about it does not abrogate the doctrine, then no, that is not an attractive nuisance case. If they, assuming the pool is an attractive nuisance, if a child trespasses because they're allured by the pool and falls into the pool and unfortunately is injured or drowns, that is an attractive nuisance case because of the fidelity that you have to have to the conception and the way it's been held in Colorado that the doctrine operates. That is what fulfills, I believe that is what fulfills the goal of the statute, which is actually another term of statutory construction. We're supposed to be deciding what statutory language means to fulfill the ultimate purpose of the statute. And I don't believe that appellant's version of the statute fulfills that purpose, because again, it divorces liability of the landowner from the reason why the plaintiff is on the property in the first place. And it presents us with a situation where we're treating trespassers, licensees, and invitees all the same way with some fourth standard of care that I see nowhere in the statute.
Well, but let me get back to your point about treating the child as an invitee if they've been enticed onto the property, enticed to trespass by an attractive nuisance. Tell me what case law supports your view of that.
To treat them as an invitee?
Yeah.
Well, you won't find any case that specifically, of course, deals with the premises liability statute in that respect, because all that case law preceded, of course, Mile High, and then in 1971, and then in 1986, the passage of the statute. But if we want to quote some cases, there's a case cited in a brief called Coppelcom from the Colorado Court of Appeals from 1901. And in that case, they're quoting with approval a Minnesota case that talks about the reason you have this doctrine operating the way it does is that it is an invitation. A quote from they also quoted the Kansas Supreme Court, quote, "To maintain upon one's property enticements to the ignorant or unwary is tantamount to an invitation to visit and to inspect and enjoy." So they're discussing it in terms of being an invitation. The Minnesota case, I believe, this may be a paraphrase or it may be a direct quote, "In such cases, the obligation to endeavor to protect from the dangers of the seductive instrument or place follows justly as though the invitation had been expressed." So again, that merry-go-round, for example, or swimming pool, to use Your Honor's example, operates as the invitation to the today, a child 13 years old or younger who is not presumed to have the mental capacity or discretion to understand the danger, and the allurement is the invitation. So we treat them, did treat them at common law as an invitee, and I believe under the statute in that particular situation, we treat them as an invitee. We may have a question as to what standard applies. Is it this sort of fourth standard of just general reasonable care, or is it the standard specified within the statute as to invitees? assuming there is a difference between those standards, and I know this court has actually talked about whether there is a difference in those standards, but assuming there is a difference, I would go further and argue there is no reasonable care standard anymore. Why? Subparagraph 2 of the statute says that a landowner shall only be liable as provided in subpart 3, the three standards of care. To interpret that sentence and the sentence about not abrogating the doctrine of attractive nuisance in harmony and have it all make sense, you treat a trespassing child 13 years or younger who's drawn onto the property by this irresistible artificial object, you treat them as an invitee under the statute. If they trespass for any other reason, they're a trespasser and are subject, the landowner is subject to the standard of care for trespassers.
Is there any authority for saying that a reasonable care standard is higher than any of the standards that are set out in our statute? Our premises liability statute.
There's actually a case called Lombard, which I believe was written by Judge Roy, which
is discriminately correct.
Yeah. It was reversed on other grounds, so you maybe will be right, Your Honor.
It only happened once in 100 years. It's okay.
It actually discusses that concept, that is there a difference between the sort of general negligence reason standard of care and the standard of care for invitees as expressed in the statute? And I believe the point made in that case was it may be to say unreasonable failure to exercise reasonable care may be a redundancy, but it may not be. It may actually try to express that the legislature's desire, which is expressed elsewhere in the statute, that they did not want landowners to be subjected to the standards of care at common law. They wanted them to have more protection than what the landowner would have at common law. That's actually one of the express goals within the statute. Some of the other express goals within the statute we'll find in subpart 1.5 are that the legislature intended that the statute would be such that it would promote commercial enterprise, promote private property rights, promote the affordability and availability of insurance. And if we take appellant's interpretation of the statute, namely that it doesn't make any difference why a plaintiff is on the property, and we have now an expansive common law doctrine that can be interpreted by this court in any way that it deems necessary to fulfill certain ends, then I'd say that that goes against the goals of the statute, that we actually want more protection for landowners. We want affordability and availability of insurance. We want to promote private property and commercial enterprise.
Mr. Palmer, can I ask you, I guess I'd like to ask you the same question I asked Mr. Purvis. You make compelling arguments, and I understand them all. And my question is whether we need to reach any of them in this case. If could we not, or tell me why we couldn't, assume for purposes of argument that Mr. Purvis is right. The attractive nuisance doctrine applies to all three, trespasser, licensee, invitee. Could we not conclude in this case that's all fine, and Mr. Purvis's client can't prevail anyway in this case as a matter of law because there was no evidence of enticement to the trespass?
Well, I'm sure Mr. Purvis would argue, I don't want to speak for him, but I'm sure he would argue that I think we all agree that he was not brought onto the property by the bungee run itself. He was invited as a social guest.
And you say that's the law, that it has to be an enticement to the trespass, correct?
I think so.
All right, so if we were to conclude as a matter of law he wasn't enticed to the trespass, could we not assume without deciding it applies to all three, or say we don't have to decide that because assuming it applies to all three, there's no evidence of enticement to the trespass, so Mr. Purvis's client can't prevail on the attractive nuisance claim?
I would say that's correct. We do believe that enticement to trespass by the instrumentality of injury, which is the irresistible object, let's say, to the child, is a necessary element. It's there in all the case law leading up to Mile High. I believe by using the phrase attractive nuisance within the statute, that is the nature of the doctrine that the legislature is referring to, including that element, enticement to trespass. There's actually another reason why the court doesn't have to reach any of these issues, and it's mentioned in our brief. I don't know that it's not the substance of the case, but we do take the position that an attractive nuisance claim was never pleaded in the first.
But you did lose that one, and you haven't appealed. I mean, the court ruled against you. The court found it was sufficiently pled, and you have not appealed that.
No, but that's not necessary. No cross appeal is needed on that issue, which has been said in many cases by the Supreme Court and this court.
Give us some authority for
absolutely.
That, counsel.
Evans against Romer, 54 Pacific 2nd, 1270. A party, quote, may defend the judgment of the trial court on any grounds supported in the record, so long as the party's rights are not increased under the judgment, period, unquote. That's at page 1275. They cite for that another case called Farmers Group against Williams, 805 Pacific 2nd, 419. That's a Supreme Court case from 1991. This court had a case called White against Caterpillar Incorporated, 867 Pacific 2nd, 100. That's from 1993 at page 109, which cites an earlier appellate court case, early against Department of Administration, 844 Pacific 2nd, page 1267 from 1992. So all we're asking is to affirm the judgment based on the other grounds that are in the record, namely in the summary judgment briefing that we believe they didn't properly plead this claim in the first place. My time is about up. We would simply ask that the court affirm the judgment of the district court in this matter, and I thank the court for its time and attention.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for their oral arguments and their briefs. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course. Thank you, counsel.